Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for April 16, 2018. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David. How are you tonight? And good evening, everybody out there who listens to the Veterans News Hour. Hope everyone is doing well this evening and that our audience is, that's right, the Northeast still has some issues, don't they? But tonight our special guest is going to be Jerry Ensminger, who is a co-founder of the activist group The Few, The Proud, The Forgotten. Jerry is intricately involved with the water contamination that occurred at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina between 1953 and 1987, and he has been fighting for veterans whose health were adversely affected by the exposure to this water contamination. However, his fight began on a more personal level when his 9-year-old daughter, Jamie, died of a rare leukemia. In 1983, at the age of 7, she was diagnosed with leukemia and was the only child in the entire family's known history to have been diagnosed with cancer. She was subjected to many bone marrow extractions and spinal taps, fighting the cancer for nearly 2.5 years before succumbing to it. As a grief-stricken father, Jerry struggled for years to make sense of what happened. It was Jerry's conviction that Jamie's leukemia was caused by toxic chemicals in the drinking water at Camp Lejeune, which Jerry did not know about until 1997. We're going to hear that story during our interview. When a federal government report concluded that for nearly 3 decades, the tap water at Camp Lejeune had been contaminated by toxic chemicals associated with childhood and adult cancers, especially leukemia, President Barack Obama signed the Jamie Ensminger Act into law in the year 2012. Before we welcome Jerry to the show, I want to remind our audience that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions. Maybe you have a question for Jerry about Camp Lejeune, or you want to tell us about your own personal experience with Camp Lejeune. So you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. And without any further delay, I would like to welcome Jerry to the Veteran News Hour. How are you tonight, Jerry?
Hi. Thank you.
How you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
I want to thank you for all the work you've done on behalf of our veterans who were exposed to the toxic water contamination while serving at Camp Lejeune. We have plenty to discuss. However, if you would not mind, please take us back to 1983. Tell us a little bit about Jamie and her fight against leukemia.
Well, Jamie was diagnosed in 1983. She subsequently passed away in 1985. Jamie started getting strep throat. And it wouldn't clear up. It would start to go away and then it would come raging back. She had been on several different regimens of antibiotics. And finally, one Sunday, she had a high fever. I was putting cold compresses on her head. She was on Tylenol. It didn't bring the fever down. Finally, I took her shirt off to put cold compresses on her body, and I noticed these strange little marks all over her body, all over her torso, looked like little hickeys. They were blood right up under her skin. That scared the bejesus out of me, so I quickly loaded her up and took her into the Naval Hospital, Camp Lejeune. And luckily, my regimental surgeon was on duty at the urgent care clinic that day. And we sat there and sat there and sat there. We went down to the lab initially, had blood drawn, and we sat there for almost forever. And finally, I got a little bit agitated, and we were the only ones left in there in all those empty other empty seats. Janie was asleep. And finally, I went over to the corpsmen that were on duty at the front desk, and I started raising Cain. And one of them ran back and got Doc Bowman, and the doctor, and he came out, and he pulled me off to the side and said, look, he said, I'm waiting for the head of pediatrics to come in here. This was on a Sunday. And he said, I got to tell you something. He said, it's just preliminary. He said, but we suspect that your daughter has leukemia. I'll tell you what, you know, I went to my knees, and thankfully I was out of Janie's view where she couldn't see me. And I went down, and I'll tell you what, my forehead went down on those cold imitation stone tiles that were on that floor, and I broke out in a cold sweat. It was the weirdest, one of the weirdest feelings I ever had. And then from that point, it was, you know, getting her up and having a bone marrow sample taken. She had a very, very, very high level, high counts. So she was in a placed in a whole different category as far as, you know, her prognosis would go. And we got her into remission, and she stayed in remission for about 16 months. She relapsed, put her back through the induction phase chemotherapy with different chemotherapies. She went back, got back into remission for a very short period of time, and she relapsed again, and then she subsequently passed away.
Jerry,
she died. She died on September 24th, 1985. And, you know, anybody that has a child who dies of a catastrophic illness such as cancer, there is always, any child that's even diagnosed with it. I mean, I've met all these other parents in all these different university medical centers while Janie was undergoing treatment. And without exception, every parent that I ever met said that they had this one thing, and it's one thing that we all had in common. And that was the question, why? And that nagging question stayed with me through her diagnosis, through her treatments, through her death. And it stayed with me until August of 1997. And I was walking out of my kitchen. I had been retired for 3 years. I was walking out of my kitchen to watch the evening news with a plate of spaghetti. And I walked into the living room, and the reporter on the TV screen said that the report on Camp Lejeune's contaminated drinking water by the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry had been, the initial report had been released the day before. And they said that in that report, it stated that they were concerned about these contaminants that were found in Camp Lejeune's drinking water, primarily for children. And they said they were worried that it caused childhood cancer, primarily leukemia. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, that was... I dropped my plate of spaghetti on the living room floor. And...
Jerry, if I may, Janie was... You, obviously, you were stationed at Camp Lejeune during Janie's childhood. And how long was Janie at Camp Lejeune?
Well, the worst part for a child is exposure in utero while they're in the womb. And Janie was exposed for the entire first trimester of the pregnancy. And right at the, I was in DI school at Parris Island, and they would not allow you to take your family with you while you were in school because you're under temporary instruction orders. And you could only move your family after you completed the school. And, you know, the school had such a high attrition rate, that I understand why they don't allow you to transfer your families. So Janie was exposed in utero for the first trimester, and from all the scientific data that I have seen, the first trimester is the most critical trimester for children that are exposed to some type of contaminant. And then we went back to Camp Lejeune. I finished my tour on the drill field, went to Okinawa for a year, came back, and we went back to Camp Lejeune. So we were back there, and that was when she was ultimately diagnosed.
In 1983?
Yes.
Yeah. So for 14, for 12 years, you had this wonder, you know, how did this happen to Janie? Because none of your other children, as I understand it, were affected.
No, and Janie was the only one of my four daughters to have been either conceived, carried, or born while we were living on the base at Camp Lejeune. And subsequently, Janie was the only one that got cancer. So, I mean, you know, the odds are, you know.
Sure.
It's terrible. And, you know, whenever you watch anybody that loses a child, it's a terrible thing. It's a terrible event in their life. But to watch one of your children die a little bit at a time and go through hell, I mean literally go through hell with the treatments for 2.5 years and then lose them that way is I can't describe it. And hopefully, you know, nobody out there ever has to live through that. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
I know the motto for Marines is always semper fidelis, always faithful. My dad was a Marine up until his death, and loved the Corps. And I know how proud you Marines are. I can only imagine how you must have felt in 1997 when you found out that this contamination at Camp Lejeune, which had been ongoing for so long, could have been the cause of your daughter's passing. And that
must I wasn't that upset with the Department of Navy Marine Corps at that time, initially. As a matter of fact, I started calling the base. And I slowly began to realize the way these people were treating me, that, you know, there was something else going on here. And, you know, as time passed and we got our hands on more documents, and the truth started to slowly reveal itself, that's when the anger set in and the feelings of betrayal began to set in. I did 2.5 years as a drill instructor. I trained over 2,000 new Marines as a drill instructor. Nobody could be more disillusioned by the misconduct that I have seen represented by the highest levels of leadership in the United States Marine Corps and Department of the Navy, and nobody can be more disillusioned than I am, or I have been.
I know you and I have talked in the last couple of days about some of the struggles you had to get where you are, you know, ultimately in 2012. President Obama signed Jenny Esminger Act. But from 1997 to 2012, tell us, I mean, what you must have gone through in the meetings in D.C., and I know you're still going through them, but tell us a little bit about some of that.
Well, you know, it started out going to Capitol Hill. You know, I didn't know anybody up there. I just started making appointments and going, and I didn't have the money to get hotels and, you know, pay for, you know, my meals and restaurants. So I started out making day trips. I'd make my appointments for late in the morning or early in the afternoon. I would get up at 3:00. Get showered, shaved, dressed, or partially dressed, hang my suit jacket in my vehicle, and I would drive straight through to Washington. I would make my late morning appointments or early afternoon appointments, and then drive all the way back to my farm in North Carolina. And then eventually I got to know people who became my allies that lived in the D.C. area, and they allowed me to stay with them when I had to come up there. But it was a long, hard struggle. I mean, and any issue like this, especially when you're fighting somebody like the Department of the Navy and the United States Marine Corps, it's a long, hard fight. I mean, and we had documents. We had their own documents out of their files, which, you know, I told Mike Partain a long time ago, you know, the one luxury we had was that this had happened back in the, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, and whenever all this started coming out back in the mid-80s and started to come to light, the Marine Corps and Department of the Navy told all of their lies up front and in writing. And after we found out the truth, you know, it was quite an eye opener for the, you know, the elected officials that we, you know, when we went in and sat down with them and laid it out for them and said, here's what they said. Here's the truth. Now, these are their own documents. So, you know, there's no way that they could say, well, you know, you know, you can't prove this. No, we proved it with their own documents and their own lies.
Now, you talked about Mike Partain. Mike was a guest on our show about 6 weeks or so ago. When did he come on board with you?
I testified at a congressional hearing in 2007. It was titled Poison Patriots. It was the Oversight Committee, subcommittee of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. And Mike was being treated for his cancer at that time. And his dad, who was a former Marine, saw me on CNN. And he got a hold of Mike and told Mike to watch CNN, and they played it. And then Mike called the chief of staff of the congressman who was the chairman of that subcommittee that held the hearing and asked them to pass his phone, his contact information to me. And I contacted him when I was headed home from Washington after that hearing. And Mike came on board, and, you know, at the time that he came on board, he was a godsend because my old ally had kind of fallen out of the hike at that time. That was Tom Townsend, Major Townsend, retired. He lived in Idaho. I lived in North Carolina. And Tom Townsend wrote over 1,000 Freedom of Information Act requests, FOIA requests, by hand. Over 1,000.
Wow. So, you were talking about the struggle trying to get congressmen to pay attention to the Camp Lejeune issue. I know. On a personal note, we have a congressman down here, Bill Arrakis, who's the number two man on the Veterans Committee. And I have tried for 2 years to try to speak to him. You know, I've even invited him on the show. I can't get past the secretary. So I can only imagine what he must have gone through, you know. And
I'll give you the same advice that I give other people that contact me about working with elected officials. And I tell them right up front, don't call these people on the telephone. Don't send them a fax. Don't send them an email. You got to put yourself in front of them, okay? You've got to make an appointment and go in and sit down with these people. They can't hide from you whenever you're standing right there. Because let me tell you, when you call a senator's or a congressman's office, they have interns answering those telephones. And I know for a fact that these kids in the evenings go out to these little cafes and pubs and stuff around Capitol Hill, and they have a game that they play, and the winner is the person that has the craziest phone call for that day. I mean, they laugh about the stuff. So, you know, don't count on calling somebody and getting any kind of action. You've got to put yourself up there, and you got to be looking that person in the eye. That's how I dealt with Camp Lejeune, and that's the way, you know, if you're getting any issue you got that you want an elected official to take action on, you need to go sit down with them, and they can't escape you then.
Kind of like put your foot in the door and don't let them close it on you.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah. You know, when I first started this, you know, I had almost literally had to put my foot in the door before they slammed it. But as years went by, And Mike and I earned our credibility. It wasn't trying to get your foot in the door anymore. It was them calling me, asking me questions. And, you know, that's another thing about fighting an issue like Camp Lejeune, is that for your listeners out there. And this is a warning that I gave to Mike and everybody else that came on board on this issue, because it was something my sister taught me. And my sister has her own public relations firm in York, Pennsylvania. And she told me, never, ever make an allegation or speculate about something to an elected official or the media that you do not have a document to back it up. Your credibility is the best thing that you have. And if you lose your credibility with Congress or with the media, well, not only are you done, your issue's done. Because once you lose your credibility, it's very difficult to gain it back. So we were always very careful, you know, not to speculate. Whenever I did speculate with somebody, I'd tell them right up front, this is what I think. I can't prove it, but this is what I think took place. You always preface your speculative statements.
So, Jerry, tell us a little bit about, I mean, here, now 2012 comes along and you're in the Oval Office with former President Obama, and he's going to sign the Jane Amesbinger Act into law. How was that day? I mean, what was that feeling like?
Well, I mean, it was a great feeling. I mean, and if had it not been for the award-winning documentary that had been done about Camp Lejeune, I don't think that we would have ever made it to that point, or it would have taken us much longer. However, even with the documentary and even with the bill being passed by the entire Senate, it was unanimous. And then it was sent over to the House, and Jeff Miller, Congressman Jeff Miller from out around the Pensacola area, who was the chairman at that time of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, received the bill from the Senate. He had authority over it, so it went to his committee. It was laying in his inbox, and he was going to let it die in committee. He wasn't even going to bring it up for a vote.
Wow.
In the VA committee. And
what was stopping him, Jerry? If I could ask, what was stopping Congressman Miller? Why was he deep sixing it there? What was the backstory?
Well, you know, he was also a member of the Armed Services Committee, and you know, that in itself, right there, is a conflict of interest. I don't think anybody that is taking care of veterans should be sitting on the Armed Services Committee at the same time, because it is a conflict of interest. The Armed Services Committees in the House and the Senate are nothing more than a built-in protection agency for the Department of Defense.
Wow. Well, that's an interesting viewpoint I had not thought about before, because one could make the argument that it ought to be, you know, a seamless thing, that the Armed Services is looking out for the interests, you know, of the military, but also the country, obviously. And then when service members leave active duty, and the Veterans Affairs Committee is taking care of them on that side. But no, I understand your point.
Well, yeah. I mean, and when you look at it, the way I've had to see it is, hey, wait a minute. DOD's got issues that they don't want skyline, and they'd rather see them die. Well, this dealt with veterans. All the people that had been exposed at Camp Lejeune were now veterans. They were all gone by the time this all came out. They were either retired or got out. And, gee, go figure, the Department of Navy wanted this killed.
Jerry, let me ask you this question, because, you know, you were responsible for training thousands of new Marines. What message would you have for Marine Corps, Department of Navy, Department of Defense leadership about the core value of integrity based on your experience with this whole battle? I mean, what should they be hearing that they're obviously not getting?
Well, I'm from Pennsylvania originally, and there was a situation that took place at Penn State University with their football program several years back, and it's an example that I like to use.
Is that the Sandusky thing you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. The child abuse, the sexual abuse of these young boys that were coming there to their football camps. And, and whenever that happened and all of this started coming out in the media, well, before it ever came out, the leadership at Penn State University, when they found out about this, which was many years ago, what did they do? The first thing they did was circle the wagons, and they shut this thing down. They kept it quiet. They hid it to protect not only the university, but the Penn State football program. They chose to protect the institution over the protection of people. And what the Marine Corps and Department of the Navy did with the Camp Lejeune water issue was no different. They circled the wagons. They tried to protect the institution over the protection of their people. They've denied, and they've lied, and they've lied, and they've lied. But the realization is, just like Jerry Sandusky, if somebody would have taken action back when they first found out about this, how many more kids would have never had their lives ruined by
exactly.
Jerry Sandusky?
Right.
And by the same token, had the Marine Corps stepped up to the plate and done what was right and lived up to their motto and their slogan that we take care of our own,
right?
How many more people would be alive today had they found out about this and they would have been more vigilant about their health and watching? But no, they continued to lie, and to this day, to this very day, they have never, ever apologized. They have stayed the course.
Can you tell us more, because I know many of our listeners, they're somewhat familiar with the Camp Lejeune toxic water situation, but can you kind of summarize for us some of the key examples of how you and your group uncovered the lies, the cover-ups, et cetera, by the military?
Well, it was, like I said, they were putting out newspaper articles and interviews and all this whenever this started coming out in late 1984 and early 85, 86, 87. And they were making statements in those news articles and in different writings that weren't true. I'll give you, for instance, the base environmental engineer did an interview with the Raleigh News and Observer. He said, yeah, he said, we've had some contaminants leak out of these dump sites. He said, but he said, no people had been directly exposed.
Wow.
I have the newspaper article.
Wow.
Their statement when they were placed on the national priority list and became a Superfund site, their statement was full of lies.
Wow.
And to this day, they have not come back and said, admitted that they've lied. And there they are in black and white, in their own documents and in the newspaper articles and even in some of their writings that their own people did.
Wow. And these folks are probably, you know, long since left government service. Have any been held accountable in any fashion that you know of?
Nope. Nope, wow. Not one. Yeah, man, we've contacted a bunch of them.
Wow.
I mean, the assistant chief of staff for facilities, a full bird colonel, did an interview in 1988 with the base newspaper, 88 or 89. It was right before they were going to be placed on the Superfund list. I'll tell you his name. His name is Colonel Thomas Dalzell. I mean, anybody wants to look him up, he lives up in Roanoke, Virginia. I called him up. I found that article that was published in the base newspaper, and they were asking him questions about the contamination on aboard base. And they asked him about, well, what about these exposures in the water? And he said, nobody is really going to be impacted by this. And they said, well, what about, and I don't know why they asked him this question, but this date they used. They said, well, what about prior to 1983? He said, we had no knowledge that this stuff was in the water prior to 1983. Hmm. That was a bold-faced lie.
Wow. Wow. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Their goal was that, you know, when this came out and started to come out publicly, there were still people there that had been exposed. So what they were doing was downplaying this thing while those people were still in the area. Hoping that, you know, as the wheel turns, the old clock turns and time rolls on, these people will be gone and somewhere else and, you know, they'll slide by.
Now, let me ask you, in addition to the DOD, all the roadblocks and lies that you ran into, can you tell us, let's talk about the Department of Veterans Affairs and the problem you ran into with their subject matter expert, their SME program, and how that has created problems for veterans.
Well, for many years, the Camp Lejeune claims that were being filed with the VA were averaging somewhere, they hovered right around 25%. Maybe a few tenths of a point above 25 or a few tenths of a point below 25% approval rate. And the normal claims process is that you file a claim, and if you have an attending physician or specialist who will write you a nexus letter, that would be taken into consideration. Well, the VA knew that a lot of doctors and specialists were reluctant to write such letters in the past. But as more information came out about the exposures that were justified by Congress and the media, the VA got scared. They were worried that they were going to have another Agent Orange issue situation on their hands. And so they had to come up with some method of denying more claims. I mean, that's what it boils down to. So they created this subject matter expert program for Camp Lejeune claims. They added this additional hurdle in the claims process specifically for Camp Lejeune. And the claims approval went down to about 4%.
Wow.
After the subject matter expert program was initiated.
Wow.
And,
can you tell us who these subject matter experts or alleged experts were? I mean, what were the problems that you saw with that?
Well, when they created the program, they didn't have the funding to go out and actually hire real subject matter experts. So what they did, they had to select people from their existing staff. Well, the people they selected, 88 to 90, over 90% of them were family practitioners.
Wow.
They had no specialized training in toxic exposures. So we filed a lawsuit through Yale Law School, their veterans clinic, in coordination with the Vietnam Veterans of America chapter out of Connecticut, against the VA, because we wanted to see all the documents, all the correspondence, anything and everything that had anything to do with the creation and implementation of this so-called subject matter expert program. They, you know, and they claimed that, well, yeah, these people were mostly practitioners, but we sent them through training. Okay, let us see the training documents that you used. Primarily, we want to see what studies on these chemicals that these people were provided with to make their opinions, to write their opinions. And they won't do it. They will not give us this information. This is still in court. We just had another hearing on the 10th of April.
Was that the one that I know why
they won't give up those documents, because I know what they did. They went through and picked the studies that say no harm, no foul with these chemicals. What they did, they cherry-picked them. And they provided with these people with the studies that were negative to these chemicals causing these things. And that's all they provided them with. I mean, we found that we have emails. We've got some documents through this lawsuit. We've got emails where it says we need this program, and we need to write these opinions in a fashion where they are legally defensible. Well, that only means one thing. That's a denial. Why would you need a legally defensible opinion if you're going to approve it?
Right. That's a good point. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You know, for God's sake. But anyhow, you know, we had a guy with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma that got denied by a subject matter expert, and in this person's opinion, this so-called subject matter expert's opinion, we were seeing specific citations. And we went and pulled these things and started looking for them. This guy had taken excerpts, citations out of Wikipedia.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
We had...
You can't make this stuff up.
We had two people in early 2014, two veterans, who were denied for kidney cancer, and the so-called subject matter expert in his opinion wrote that he had done a in-depth review, a meta-analysis of all of the scientific studies, 2 decades worth of well-conducted scientific studies, and could find no correlation between exposure to trichloroethylene, which is TCE,
right,
and any type of cancer, let alone kidney cancer.
Wow.
And I said, wait a minute here, you know, and I went, you know, as soon as I got these denials, I had to go back to Washington. I said, I showed the papers to the people up there, and it was Senator Burr's office then. And they said, yeah, well, what about this? I said, well, there's one problem with this. They said, what's that? I said, in 2011, the United States EPA reclassified TCE as a known human carcinogen.
Oh, man.
I said, in 2012, IARC, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, reclassified TCE as a known human carcinogen. They said, yeah. And I said, our own national toxicological program is about to follow suit and reclassify TCE as a known human carcinogen. And I said, and do you know what the strongest evidence they have for reclassifying TCE as a known human carcinogen? They said, no, what is it? I said, renal cell carcinoma, a.k.a. kidney cancer.
Wow.
I said, and this is a subject matter expert?
Yeah. Wow. Well,
one of my, you know, every time I get involved in something with this issue, there's always sideline issues that pop up. That, you know, things that, you know, I got to put on a list that, you know, it's something that I need to get changed. And I'm pushing right now for Congress to put in law and legislation a standardized VA claims process, and if they want to vary from that claims process, then they have to come back to Congress to get authority to create an additional step. Because the way it is now, if the VA wants to slow down an issue or deny more claims and save money in here, or do this or do that, they can create it, you know, anything they want willy nilly.
Right. Right.
And you know, I mean, you're stuck with it.
Right. Jerry, let me ask you this. Because we're running out of time here, appreciate everything and all your insights. What can you share with us about your organization's immediate long-term goals, and what can veterans and their families and all our listeners do to help the cause, basically? Where can they get more information? Those sorts of things.
Well, there's been a lot of Facebook pages created. We have a website, the few, the proud, the forgotten.com. We are trying to get this subject matter expert program killed, and rightfully so. I mean, you know, you know, these people are family practitioners, and the veteran sends a nexus letter in that's signed by his attending oncologist. And these subject matter experts are questioning their attending oncologist.
Wow.
I mean, it is just, it's blasphemy.
What do you think about the fact Jerry, I'm sorry to interrupt. What do you think about the fact that the 2012 law that created a list of, you know, for health care coverage of 15 conditions, and then last year for the disability presumptions, that list is only 8. That's something.
Well, the 2012 law had a lot of conditions on it that, not a lot, but several, that should have never been on there. And there's some that aren't on there that need to be put on there.
I see.
And on the presumptive status, the presumptive rule for Camp Lejeune, there were two health effects dropped off of that. And one of them is kidney disease, which the VA dropped off of there themselves.
Renal toxicity? And,
yeah. And scleroderma was dropped off. And that was dropped off by OMB. Now,
for money reasons, you think, or for, you know, what were the reasons?
They won't give us a reason.
I see.
And the VA, well, they dropped off kidney disease or renal toxicity. They don't have a leg to stand on. They have a 2015 IOM report that they have never publicly released that tells them that there are studies out there that cause renal toxicity, or these chemicals cause renal toxicity, and there's some that say that it doesn't. However, the benefit of the doubt is supposed to go to the veteran. That's right. The IOM put that in writing. The IOM is the Institutes of Medicine. Now it's called the National Academy of Sciences, or National Academy of Medicine, or whatever.
Well, there's a lot. But, there's a lot more that we can learn, Jerry, and we're just about out of time. We thank you so much for being on our show tonight, and we wish you and your organization continued success. Thank you for all you've done and continue to do to help our veterans. And
yeah, thank you, Jerry, and I hope you come back because there's plenty more that we can talk about.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're talking about the 2012.
The surface.
you talk about the 2012 law, you know, I had people complain about that law after it came out. And I said, well, you know what? I wasn't exactly happy with the way that thing was written. But, you know, there's one thing that most people that have never been to Capitol Hill don't understand. And hell, a lot of our damn politicians don't understand this word. It's called compromise.
Yeah, right. You took the word right out of my mouth.
You got to compromise sometimes. You don't always get what you want right away. Hell, look at Agent Orange and how long it took Vietnam veterans to get that.
Right.
But we got our foot in the door, and that's the main thing. They've got something we can build on.
Right.
And
well, thank you so much, Jerry. I'm really sorry to have to interrupt. We hope you can be back on our show again at a time that day of your convenience. We've got to go for tonight. Thank you once again. And for our listeners, thank you so much for listening again to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'll be back next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the show. Until then, we hope you have a great week. Good night.
Good night. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.